Chapter 4. Broken Seal. Alex was the first one out of the briefing room when the meeting ended. She had to escape because suddenly, the walls were suffocating her. She needed fresh air, but that was impossible since they were presently traveling through the stars. Footsteps followed her and Alex did not need to look to know Vin was behind her. No doubt, he was filled with questions, and while she appreciated his support during the briefing, she had no intention of talking about her ordeal any further. Speaking about it was bad enough. It was the first time Alex was able to refer to the subject with another human being, let alone a room full of people. Despite the short time in their company, Alex cared for the crew of the Maverick more than any other she served with. It was why she dared to confide the truth to them. As soon as the meeting was over, she practically ran out of the room, not wishing to discuss what was the most horrific experience of her life. She had spoken about it enough for today. All she wanted now was to disappear into her quarters and sit in the dark for a few hours, so she could finally stop this heart inside her chest from pounding with its rhythm of panic. Of course, while the others were smart enough to allow Alex her privacy, Vintaner was an entirely different matter. Alex knew he wanted to help, and a small part of her wanted to let him. However, to be of any comfort to her, Vin would have to know the truth in all its entirety, and that was something Alex could not bring herself to tell anyone, especially him. The very idea of Vin knowing what happened in that Cardassian prison was so horrifying she almost doubled over and retched from the shame of it. There was only one other time she was so frightened of anyone learning the truth, and that was when her father came to see her in the hospital. Staying away from him since that day was the only way Alex could think of to hide her humiliation.
Alex, wait up.
Leave me alone, Vin.
She warned as she continued up the corridor in long forceful strides. She did not want to hear comforting words that everything would be alright and time would heal all wounds. It had been 3 years, and she still found herself hiding under her bed when the nightmares came.
Alex.
He caught her arm to stop her from running. She never had to run from him, ever. Once before, he felt her anguish but had not understood the reason for such deep pain. While the meld was unintentional, Vin did not regret their mental joining. Even though her soul was filled with anguish, it was still her soul, and it warmed him just being able to touch it with his own.
You're all twisted inside. You need to talk about it.
No!
She pulled her arm away and whirled around, glaring at him with a look in her eyes that bordered on manic.
You listen to me. I do not have to talk about anything. Do you understand? Nothing. You cannot have even the slightest idea what it was like. They took everything inside of me that was good and pure and covered it with their filth. I will not relive that nightmare by talking to you, to a counselor, or anyone else.
Vin did not know what to do. It was clear Alex did not want his help, but Vin felt torn between his feelings for her and her right to privacy.
You don't have to talk about it.
He stammered, not as sure about his course as he was a moment ago when he decided to come after her. The rest of the bridge crew had the sense to give the science officer a wide berth. Vin suspected they were just as shaken to hear what horror might befall the female crew if they were unable to stop the Jem'Hadar or, worse yet, fall captive to them during the conflict.
I just thought.
I know what you thought.
Alex cut him off savagely, seeing the sympathy in his eyes and hating Vin so much for it. He knew. Without her even saying it, no matter how vague she had been, Alex realized with despair he knew. It made her angry, and tears spilled from her eyes when she turned that rage outward and vented it to salvage her dignity.
I said what I had to in there because the others have to know. But I'll tell you right now, if we find ourselves in the same situation, if I for 1 minute think the Cardassians are going to take me alive, I will kill myself first, you hear me? I will never go through that again. I would rather die first.
With that, she turned on her heels and continued walking. This time, Vin had the sense to let her go. The officer of the Khan sat in his favorite spot against the glass of the observation deck window a short time later, nursing a hot cup of chocolate. Staring out into the stars, Vin hoped the sight of all that beauty might give him some answers. Why would she not want his help? They could always talk about everything. When he first came aboard the Maverick and was terrified about being on a ship with almost 1,000 people, Alex helped him overcome his natural shyness. She did so by being his friend first and then evolving the warmth she projected into his life as more than just that. Her service record was available on the ship's records, and Vin investigated enough of her background, without being invasive, to know Alex had suffered some terrible ordeal at the hands of the Cardassians. Still, until the briefing room, he never imagined just how horrible it could be. Vince supposed it was an alien thought to him, forcing a woman just to feel some physical pleasure. As a Vulcan whose sexuality had yet to emerge, he never experienced lust to comprehend how it could steal the sense from a person until they could not tell what was right or wrong. Yet the Cardassians had done it to Alex. They had forced her and destroyed the person she was by their vile touch. With a hint of guilt, Vin admitted having the same thoughts about Alex. He wanted to touch her but only if she wished it. Vin often imagined what it would be like to be able to touch her, to feel the luster of her smooth skin under his hands and her soft breath close to his ear. When she kissed him during that incident with Charlotte, he could not see why human males found the act so arousing, but he remembered how Alex smelled. The lingering perfume of her skin followed him around all day, like an invisible companion sitting on his shoulder. Her lips were soft and delicate, reminding him of the petals of a flower. He wanted to run his fingertips over them, to feel the silky texture and bask in everything that was she. When she yelled at him, he was at a loss to explain why the emotions he sensed seemed to burn hotter at the notion of his awareness of her situation. Why did Alex take it so personally? He knew. Vin had thought it would be easier. At least then, she would not have to bear the horror of telling him when he already understood. But it had not happened that way. She wasn't comforted at him bridging the gulf of her despair. If anything, it made her angrier. Vin was at a loss to understand it.
"You okay?"
Buck Wilmington's question made Vin look up.
"I'm fine."
The first officer lowered himself into the space across from him a moment later, and Vin felt a pang of disappointment when he remembered Alex usually sat there when they were here together.
"You look it. Someone reported hearing Alex screaming her head off a while ago on deck 4, and as near as I can figure it, the only person brave enough, not to mention stupid enough, to not leave her alone after what we heard during the briefing, would be you."
Vin stiffened in annoyance at Buck's accurate depiction of events, especially when the man was right and decided he might as well forego the bother of denying any of it.
"She told me to butt out in no uncertain terms."
"Well, I'm not surprised,"
Buck said gently, seeing no need to bait Vin anymore when he was hurting.
"You grab a tiger by the tail. You are going to get bit."
"I don't understand."
He looked at the older man, hoping the first officer might have an answer.
"I don't care what happened to her with the Cardassians. I just wanted her to know I want to help her."
"Vin,"
Buck let out a sigh.
"On this ship, there is no one that Alex cares about more than you. You're the one person she lets in as far as anyone can get in. She cares about the ship and the rest of us, but it's you who's got the keys to her heart. We all know it. Like we know, Chris sees Mary as more than just a protocol officer. It's a special thing to have in your hands. A man waits a lifetime for a woman like this to come along. One who just looks at you and couldn't care less who you have been or even what you are, just that to her you'll always be special."
Vin considered Buck's words and knew he was right. Alex did make him feel that way all the time. From the moment he came aboard the Maverick, she made those first few days tolerable when all he wanted to do was hide from everyone. Alex convinced him that being who he was shouldn't matter to anyone but himself, and to hell with those who had an opinion on something that was none of their business anyway.
"Then why won't she talk to me? If she cares so much about me, why won't she let me help her?"
Even though he was a 30-year-old man, Vin was really much younger. The differences between Vulcan and human physiology saw to that. His contact with women was limited because of his early days trapped on that forgotten planet with only the people who adopted him as their own for company. He spent the better part of his life robbed of the experiences that should have made him capable of dealing with humans, and now more than ever, it showed.
"Someday, Vin, there will come a time between you two when you aren't just friends anymore,"
Buck said gingerly, not wishing to be too blunt. Still, Vin had to know what Alex was probably thinking to keep the Vulcan from doing something that really hurt their relationship by his misplaced desire to help.
"When I said you get the key to a woman's heart and she looks at you thinking that there isn't anything you could do to make her think badly about you, it goes the other way. There are assholes out there who can't help wondering if a woman did not somehow deserve what happened to her. And I think Alex is afraid you might think that way if she talked to you about it."
"That's ridiculous. I could never think that. As it is, I feel like going out and kicking the crap out of the next Cardassians I see."
"In that case, you will not be on the bridge when our guest arrives.
You know what I mean."
Vin frowned.
"I do,"
Buck responded with a gesture of apology.
"Can't say I blame you. When I heard what she told us, I was just as mad as hell."
In fact, What Buck did not mention but was almost damn sure of, without having to hear the other say it. The other men in the room were similarly infuriated. No man who ever loved a woman could listen to that report without feeling some measure of outrage. True, they were all soldiers in the strictest sense of the word. Once you got past the uniform and the shiny hardware around which they were surrounded, as soldiers, each of them knew the rules of warfare. The Klingons followed it, so did the Romulans, hell, even the Gorn. Yet, the Cardassians had proven from the moment they annexed the spiritual world of Bajor they cared little for the conventions of other civilizations and allowed barbarism to rule the day. As brutal as the Klingons were, they respected the enemy as warriors in the field. The Romulans would extract information in whatever form necessary should one fall into their hands, but there were certain lines they did not cross because they were a graceful and elegant race in all things. After what he heard today, Buck doubted he would ever view the Cardassians in quite the same way again.
So what do I do?
Nothing. Don't do anything. There are some things a person has to accept, and this is one of them. Alex is the only one who can decide how this is gonna go, and though I know it's tough for you to swallow, that's how it's got to be.
Vin's frown deepened across his face, mostly because he knew the first officer was correct. He could not force Alex into accepting his support, and if she did not want his help, then as her friend, he would have to respect her wishes. However, even as he thought that, Vin sensed something was coming over the horizon they could not see. And whatever it was, Vin was sure Alex was going to be right in the middle of it. When Josiah Sanchez asked to see Chris Larrabee inside the captain's ready room, Chris knew what the counselor was going to ask. While Josiah had valid reasons for the request, Chris knew he would have no choice but to deny it when it was made. It was standard practice for counselors to have their way in such matters because starship captains recognize the value of a healthy mind and body. However, the disposition of a crewman was ultimately his decision to make. Undoubtedly, Josiah would be unimpressed with his choice, but Chris made up his mind the second Casey told him Josiah wanted an appointment. Chris sat behind his desk and waited for the inevitable chime while nursing a hot cup of coffee in his hand. He spent the last few hours in this room, staring at the stars through the window, absorbing the beauty outside as no doubt many of his crew often did whenever they were in conflict about things. The vastness of space had the remarkable ability to put everyday concerns into perspective. After so many hours alone in this room trying to find enlightenment, Chris came away with no answers and more doubts about the decision he would soon make, against the advice of his friend and counselor. Sooner than he liked, he beckoned Josiah to enter his private sanctum. At any other time, Chris would welcome Josiah's presence as a break from the tedium of reports and other snippets of starship business that took up his time. The counselor would enter the room, often producing a bottle of something that was definitely not synthahol and drink just enough to let the tension seep out of their bones. Chris never told Josiah how much those moments meant to him. It was like getting back that dithering old man with all his leather books Chris loved so much as a child. Josiah entered the room, carrying no bottle, which did not bode well for the rest of the meeting.
What can I do for you, Josiah?
Chris eased further into the chair, inviting Josiah to sit.
I think you know.
Alex Stiles?
Alex Stiles.
Josiah nodded in the affirmative.
I want her taken off active duty.
Josiah did not like doing this, but after what he heard in the briefing room, he took the last few hours to make a quick investigation, and what he learned was enough to make him ask for this meeting. He knew Chris would not like it. Judging by the look in the captain's eyes, Josiah was not even sure Chris understood why he was asking, but if the captain only knew what Josiah had discovered during these last hours of research, there would be no doubt in his mind why this was important.
Why?
Chris asked simply, unsurprised by the demand, and wanted to hear Josiah's reasoning to take a fine officer from her job when it was likely the only thing holding her together. As someone who had been torn apart inside out once upon a time, Chris knew the job had the power to heal the way nothing else could.
You heard her.
Josiah looked at him with shock, unable to imagine how Chris could even ask.
When that Cardassians comes aboard, it will be exposing antimatter. I rather she not be put through that kind of trauma, and I would also request she begin counseling immediately.
She says she can handle it. I think she can.
Josiah tried to remain calm, knowing Chris cared just as much for the officers under his command as Josiah.
Chris, I know you want to give her the benefit of the doubt, and it is admirable, but I'm asking you, take her off active duty at least until this Cardassians is gone and this mission is over.
Chris braced himself. No.
May I ask why?
She has given me no reason to suspend her from duty, and for that matter,
the captain narrowed his eyes at Josiah.
Neither have you.
Josiah stiffened in his chair and returned Chris's gaze with just as much intensity.
Chris, I am asking you to suspend her from duty. I am asking you because it is my professional judgment that it is unwise for her to be anywhere near this Cardassians when he comes on board.
Chris's temper flared despite himself.
Josiah, what is the problem? She said she's fine. Isn't it more therapeutic that we give her the benefit of the doubt instead of punishing her for being traumatized years ago, just because we have a guest on board?
It's not a punishment.
That's not how she'll see it. There are times when I look into that woman's face and know exactly how she feels. I know the hurt and the pain that wants to tear you apart if you allow it the power to do so. The one thing that kept me from breaking into a thousand pieces after Buck convinced me my life wasn't over when Sarah and Adam died was the job. The job kept me alive. I won't take that away from Alex.
Josiah understood what Chris was trying to say. He really did. While he admired his captain for his empathy towards Alexandra Stiles, Josiah also knew that Chris was wrong in this instance. Absolutely wrong. Josiah decided he was going to have no choice but to say it.
Chris, do you know how many female officers were Cardassians prisoners of war since the border wars?
No, I don't.
Chris frowned, wondering if Josiah would now try to sway him by bombarding him with figures.
53. Do you know how many of them are still alive?
Chris looked up, suddenly having an awful feeling about this. Josiah did not bother to let him venture a guess.
Including Alex, 13.
13? Out of 53?
Out of 53.
What happened to them?
In almost all cases, suicide. Starfleet has a file buried someplace no one will look, because to do so would bring into question the sensibility of allowing female officers to command starships or to be placed in situations where they may fall prey to the enemy. It would put back the status of women in combat for almost 400 years. Starfleet is aware of the problem, but they can't do anything about it without raising politically imprudent questions. I contacted Starfleet Medical, and using my authority, I broke the seal on her records.
You had no right to do that. Alex has a right to her privacy.
She was 8 weeks pregnant when they took her off that packled freighter.
Christ.
Chris let out a groan of outrage.
Not surprisingly, a therapeutic termination was carried out. According to the records, Alex was too catatonic to object. Genetic material recovered indicated the father was Cardassians.
Chris's jaw tightened.
Those bastards.
The medical officer who examined her when they brought her in reported an extended period of abuse. There were indications of rape throughout the entire time she was held captive.
Josiah paused for a moment, composing himself as his own emotions started to overcome him.
Almost as recently as a week before the POC leads found her floating in that escape pod. There were all kinds of internal damage, broken bones and severe trauma. Apparently, the Cardassians had a very good time at the expense of our science officer.
How could anyone find something like that pleasurable?
Chris found his voice, but it was hoarse with horror when it escaped him.
Well, they do it a lot.
Josiah replied, unable to imagine it himself.
Almost all female officers who fall into Cardassians' hands are found with the same injuries and deep trauma. Some recover, but the damage is burned into them, and it's even worse when the woman is career. The Cardassians apparently get off on breaking high-ranking officers. Most never come out of the catatonia and usually suicide early on after rescue. Others try to go back to their lives, struggle to forget but can't face duty in the front lines again and opt for safe planet side postings.
But Alex?
Alex is your exception. She asked for the posting to the Maverick. Therapists who attempted to treat her back then say it has something to do with her Klingon upbringing. You know how they can be, even their women.
Klingons accepted suffering and adversity as a challenge to be faced as warriors, no matter how demeaning the situation. There was glory to be had as long as one met it as a true warrior of the field. Alex was practically raised Klingon when her father was attached to the Federation Embassy on Konos for most of her childhood. If Alex lived her life according to that simple philosophy, Chris couldn't understand why she was here on the frontier, where anything could happen. In understanding, he also knew something else.
I won't relieve Alex of duty.
After what I just told you, why?
Josiah demanded angrily, telling himself repeatedly Chris did not make such decisions lightly.
You said it yourself,
Chris replied, sincerely believing he was right.
Alex is the exception. She is out here because she would rather face the fear than let it take her. I admire that, and I believe it is what has kept her alive and in the trenches. We start protecting her now, and we harm her because we will never allow her to believe she can be safe again on her own.
That's taking a hell of a gamble,
Josiah countered, seeing the merit in Chris's words but not at all liking the cost if the captain was wrong.
And it's one I will not support. I am placing an official request to have her relieved of duty on the grounds of mental incapacity.
Chris stood up to meet the challenge head on.
And I am officially denying it. She stays on duty until she gives me a reason to say otherwise.
Josiah let out a heavy sigh, unable to believe it had come to this, but it had, and now the die was cast.
For your sake as well as hers, I hope you are right, Chris, because if you are wrong, we'll lose her like we lost the others.
Chapter 5. The Guilty. Despite Josiah's premonition, nothing good would come of Alex remaining on duty. The following 2 days passed without incident. The Maverick continued its journey to Deep Space 5 to take on their Cardassian guest, and while the tension levels were up, as one must expect it to do on a starship during a time of crisis, it was within acceptable limits. Across the Maverick, all departments undertook preparations in readiness for the possibility of a battle with the Jem'Hadar. Engineering crews worked double shifts, reinforcing systems, running diagnostics, boosting shield and phaser strength while rationing energy use onboard. In the meantime, Ezra ran his security teams through combat simulations with Jem'Hadar troops on the holodeck. He spent much of the next 2 days dividing his time between security and engineering, working with his team and aiding Chief Engineer Julia Pemberton as they worked to strengthen the ship's defenses. Josiah presented Chris with a list of civilians who would be disembarking at Deep Space 5, and many of these would be spouses with young families. Still, some opted to remain, willing to accept the risks that came with settling on a starship. Chris had to admire their courage but suspected they had no idea what they faced if captured. Mary read up as much as she could on Cardassian culture, setting aside her personal feelings after learning about Alex's time with them to conduct herself as a protocol officer. Since much of the intelligence they needed to halt the Dominion advance into this sector of space would originate from the defector, they would have to give their guest every respect. Mary decided this meant keeping the man as far away from Alex as possible. Of course, it was unavoidable they would cross each other's path, but Mary wanted to spare Alex any unpleasant memories of the race that had brought her such pain. Even though Chris appreciated Mary was a protocol officer and had to remain by the side of the Cardassian for most of his time here, he could not deny he was bothered by how closely she would have to work with the man, particularly after knowing what he did about Cardassians dealing with female prisoners of war. Aware he would pay for it later, Chris slipped a quiet word in Ezra's ear for a security detail to be close by when Mary was alone with the former ghoul. Alex spent most of the journey in the astrometric lab. She and the rest of the stellar cartography team worked diligently sifting through the data accumulated, charting new territories in the frontier. Among those gigaquads of information was a planet capable of supporting trinucleic fungi. For the sake of the Alpha Quadrant, the Maverick had to find it first. During this investigation, the science officer stayed off the bridge, and Chris saw no reason to request her presence because what she was doing in astrometrics was important. He also understood her difficulty facing the rest of the senior staff. Now they knew the truth about her imprisonment. During their time on the holodeck together, Chris noticed Vin was preoccupied, and it did not take a feat of genius to know what concerned the Vulcan. On a starship, there were very few secrets. From Ezra's Friday night poker games, Casey's expertise with the violin to the fact the best linguine to be had anywhere in the sector saw its origins in Nathan Jackson's capable hands. Everyone knew the science officer and the officer of the con were in a platonic relationship. Ezra was betting money would change the instant Vin hit sexual maturity. Chris could understand why the Vulcan might be in a state of flux. It was no easy thing to stand by and watch the woman you cared about endure her private equivalent of hell with no idea how to help her through it. If it were Mary, Chris knew it would be no different for him. Still, Vin never allowed it to interfere with his work and did not bring it up with him in conversation. Because of their close friendship, Vin did not want Chris to be burdened with more than he already had as a captain. Besides, Chris had very little advice he could offer Vin, other than what the young man was doing already, which was to let Alex dictate when she would need his aid.
"We're coming into range of Deep Space 5.
J.D. Dunn announced as the viewer screen displayed the image of the station in the approaching space before them. Chris looked up and took note the station seemed in better condition than it did the last time they came this way. Over the last few months, Captain Krista intensified the efforts to repair all the structural damage caused during the recent Borg invasion. As they slowly approached the station, it appeared Krista's actions were well worth it because the station looked very impressive indeed. It was a far cry from the dilapidated wreck they visited during their maiden voyage. The devastation wrought by the Borg's invasion of Lyzha was still apparent on the planet's surface. However, the station's traffic indicated restoration efforts were well underway. Chris could see smaller vessels crisscrossing through the space around the Federation outpost. They approached the docking rings to begin embarkation while others were departing for destinations elsewhere or were part of the relief effort on Lyzha.
Captain Krista must have been putting in rotating shifts to get this kind of results, Chris commented, impressed.
If I am to understand it, Captain,
Ezra Standish declared from his corner of the bridge.
The entire station has been refitted with new fortifications. I believe she now has the defensive capability similar to the refit undergone by Deep Space Nine in preparation for the Dominion War.
Makes sense,
Vin commented from the helm.
They're out here in the thick of things as much as we are, and they got more people to worry about. A moving target has a chance of escape. A space station doesn't.
Agreed. I have been told the outer hull has been replaced with duranium plating, making it virtually impossible for a breach, and nearly all the upper pylons have been installed with torpedo launchers. The station carries an arsenal of almost 5,000 photon torpedoes and an impressive cache of the quantum variety. In other words, should the Jem'Hadar come this way, they are likely to be in for an interesting reception.
How the hell do you have that kind of information, Ezra?
Chris turned around and stared at his security chief with a hint of admiration and annoyance.
The specifications on the refit of Deep Space 5 is classified information. Only starship captains with command level clearance are meant to have that kind of access.
It is amazing what can be ascertained when one holds four of a kind when playing with the engineer of the Lexington, who incidentally is a rather verbal young man who let it slip most unintentionally about the materials he was bringing to the station. I simply made of it what I could.
Ezra volunteered innocently. Chris shook his head in resignation.
Consider yourself a security breach commander and hail the station.
Aye, sir.
Now the fun begins.
Buck mused softly.
Mary is on standby to transport to the station.
The first officer dutifully informed the captain.
She'll be escorting our guest back to the Maverick and help him get settled in.
Chris knew he did not have to worry about the welfare of the protocol officer, especially when she would be surrounded by dozens of Starfleet personnel on the station, to say nothing of the security people assigned to her the moment she returned to the ship. He did not know why he was being paranoid, because this Cardassian could not possibly be held accountable for the crimes of others, but he could not help it. The thought of what had happened to Alex happening to his Mary was so odious, it made him sick to his stomach just thinking about it.
Where's Alex?
She's still in Astrometrics,
Vin answered before Buck could.
I think she's still trying to find this planet. Said she'll be there for most of the day.
In truth, they all knew she was probably trying to stay out of sight and limit her interaction with the Cardassian as much as she could. Chris was glad. After his discussion with Josiah and their adversarial positions regarding Alex's continued presence on the bridge, he did not want to be proven wrong. At the very least, Josiah would never let him forget it, and at the very worst, Alex might end up killing herself like all those other poor women. Chris had enough deaths on his conscience to last a lifetime.
Make sure she stays there. I don't want any incidents.
I'll see to it. Hell, I could use another butt-kicking in the holodeck anyway.
A slight titter of laughter rippled through the room and eased the tension on the bridge.
You know it's saying something that a Vulcan four times stronger than any human can get periodically kicked from here to kingdom come by a woman is beyond belief. Not that I'm sexist or anything.
Buck grinned. Vin looked over his shoulder and remarked with a bit of a smile.
Well, maybe cause you aren't the only one who knows a little something about women.
Mary Travis had not gained many opportunities to visit Deep Space 5 the last time they were in the vicinity. Not that she was going to get the chance this time either. She didn't mind. Space stations seemed somewhat immortal no matter how much adversity they might face in the way of threats, whether they were invasion fleets or random spatial phenomena. Chances were, she would have an opportunity to visit again once this present crisis was over. Did she think the Maverick was going to survive its encounter with the Jem'Hadar? Absolutely. If anyone could pull such a hat trick like that, Mary knew it was Chris Larrabee. It was a belief not simply engendered by the fact she cared for the man, but more from the feeling there was something extraordinary about the Maverick and its crew. Mary could not explain the confidence, but there was something mystical about being a part of their fellowship. Mary continued down the corridor leading to the defector's suite as directed by the ensign on hand to greet her when she had stepped off the transporter pad. The Maverick's docking with Deep Space 5 would be brief. The ship was staying long enough for their new passenger to come on board and the civilians to disembark. Mary herself had opted to keep William with her despite Chris's advice to the contrary. Although she did not want to endanger her son, she could not bring herself to leave him on the station with strangers either. Not that Chris didn't try to talk her into accepting the leave he offered so she could be with her son. While Mary appreciated the gesture, she was not about to hide from the risks expected of every person in Starfleet, even those with children. She reached the end of the corridor, passing the other inhabitants of this section of the habitat ring, and saw the door in question. Taking a deep breath, Mary reminded herself what she heard in the briefing room should make no difference to her. Diplomacy was the day's requirement, and it was what she was best at. Mary paused at the door and pressed the button announcing her arrival to the occupant of the room. She waited a moment, remembering this man was an ally and the survival of the Federation hinged on what he would be able to tell them about the imminent Jem'Hadar invasion of the frontier. The door slid open, and Mary came face to face with a tall, imposing Cardassian who regarded her with a mixture of expectation and mild curiosity. He was like all Cardassians, harsh-looking, mainly because that was how the human mind interpreted the bony protrusions of their face. However, he was handsome to a certain extent and wore the garb of Cardassian Gaul, the equivalent of a starship captain. The markings on his uniform indicated he was from the Ninth Order, second in importance to the Obsidian Order, the dreaded secret police that ruled supreme on Cardassia Prime.
I am Lieutenant Mary Travis, protocol officer to the USS Maverick. I'm here to provide you with an escort to the ship.
Where is the captain?
He demanded, displaying the arrogance of someone unaccustomed to being around those he considered lessers. Mary ignored his rudeness.
As per Starfleet orders, we have been told to make your embarkation onto the Maverick as discreet as possible. We would not want to draw attention to you by having a starship captain arriving at your door.
How do I know that you are not a Dominion spy?
Likewise.
Mary said with a single raised brow. The Cardassian gave her a look and then broke into a smile.
Touché, Lieutenant. We shall proceed.
He retreated into his room and picked up a single bag resting on the chair. He cast a distasteful eye over the small room that had been his home since his arrival on the station.
These quarters are barely adequate. Of course, I am spoiled by the luxurious standards of Cardassian stations. I believe you have had a chance to sample such offerings by your acquisition of Terraknor.
You mean Deep Space Nine?
She pointed out aware the Cardassians hated Terraknor to be referred to as such. He glanced over her shoulder and replied just as smoothly, impressed by her ability to hold her own.
Yes. I assume a galaxy-class starship will be able to provide better lodgings?
I have prepared our VIP suite for your use and programmed the replicators to provide you with Cardassian cuisine.
How enterprising of you. Are you similarly talented in fulfilling any other needs I might have?
He asked, taking a step closer towards her until she could feel his breath on her skin.
Shall we proceed?
She took a step back, unaffected by his attempt at charm or intimidation. Whether or not the Jem'Hadar attacked, this was going to be one long mission. After allowing Alex to beat him again, at least that's what he told himself, Vin and the science officer made their way to Four Corners to get something to drink. They spent the last 2 hours on the holodeck combating simulated opponents in a quest to claim an ancient Klingon temple on Borath. It was basically a combat program allowing Alex the opportunity to vent much of the anger presently churning inside her, thanks to the unexpected confrontation with her past. The combat program was one of few they shared together. Another was a horse riding program, although Alex usually spent it nestled behind him on the saddle because she did not know how to ride. Vin enjoyed that a great deal because he got to keep her scent on him for the rest of the day. Their quarrel 2 days before was forgotten, and the status quo between them was back to normal. Although Alex did not guess his ulterior motive for spending holodeck time with her today, Vin knew she genuinely enjoyed it and was grateful they had not permanently injured their relationship. Four Corners was not busy at this time, so they found a table right next to the plexiglass window that provided a panoramic view of the Lysian homeworld.
I think after Boreth, we might go horse riding again,
Alex suggested as she stirred the cup of hot chocolate before her.
Okay.
Vin hid how pleased he was at the prospect of being close to her again. What he did not know was that it pleased Alex too.
Where to this time?
They usually rode along trails that took them through beautiful landscapes as breathtaking as the view they were seeing now.
I don't know. Do you have a program of your ranch?
Yeah.
Vin nodded, somewhat surprised because she had never asked about the ranch in Texas left to him by his adopted parents. After returning to Earth and enrolling at Starfleet Academy, Vin lived there alone for a time. Even though he did not regret leaving the place behind, he did miss its wide open spaces when he left for the academy.
I can show you the trail I used to ride every day.
Sounds good.
Alex smiled, genuinely wanting to see it and being with Vin when she did. Alex was in the process of taking a sip of her drink when Vin noticed the doors to the bar opening. He would not have paid attention to the new arrivals except one of them was Mary Travis, and the other was the Cardassian defector. The Vulcan winced inwardly, not wishing Alex to face this particular hurdle so soon but supposed it was inevitable. The best he could do was be there for her while she endured it.
Alex, the Cardassians just walked in,
Vin warned softly as he watched Mary show the Cardassian to the bar and introduce him to Inez. Alex paused in mid-sip and lowered her cup just enough to take a deep breath. Ever since the captain briefed them on the present crisis, Alex knew this was a situation she would have to face and promised herself to be a complete professional about this. She would not embarrass her captain when he placed so much faith in her abilities and on her word, she would behave.
I'm fine,
she assured him and turned towards Mary and the Gull. For an instant, as her eyes took in the sight of him, there was no reaction. Vin thought she was entirely in control until he saw her hand shaking violently and the chocolate, still burning hot, spilling over the rim without Alex noticing the heat burning into her skin. Her jaw was tightening like her grip on the cup until finally, it shattered with a loud crack as fluid emptied onto the smooth surface of the table.
Alex, what is it?
Vin demanded before the worst possible explanation reared its ugly, unimaginable head in his mind. No one had seen this coming or even that the possibility might exist. They were so worried she would take her rage out on an innocent. It never once occurred to them she might be venting her fury on the guilty. When she sprang from the table and strode towards the Cardassian, Vin knew all hell was about to break loose. Alex saw nothing but him. Everything else was dispersing matter converging into a singularity. Only he remained in her shrinking universe. Alex could not breathe. Her heart was pounding so loudly in her chest it felt like drums pounding in her ears. She couldn't even begin to process the reality of him being in front of her after all these years. Before this, he'd only existed in the nightmares that woke her up, screaming up every night. As Alex closed in on him, the horror of what he did to her was unleashed upon her mind. Being unable to breathe, she was forced on her hands and knees and brutalized one by one on his orders. All his men took turns at her, passing her around like she was an endless bottle with which they could satiate their thirst. Hearing the screams and knowing with despair they were hers, tasting vomit after she emptied everything in her stomach until she spat acid, left to weep in the aftermath of the terrible shame and humiliation. She remembered the revulsion of their stink and the clammy stickiness of their semen on her skin. Praying, always praying they would kill her but denied because they would come to take her again and again. She had begged them to stop, but her whimpers only made them want to do it more, even though her mind was half gone. She didn't care if she died today. She didn't care if the rest of her life ended at this moment. Death was a release because hell was a place she had already seen. And he who presided over her misery was right here.
Lama!
He turned sharply to her, and for a moment, he did not speak. Alex was unsurprised. Why would he remember her? After all, she was just another prisoner, another victim. Why the hell would he give her a second thought? She did not wait for the answer because no sooner than he cast his gaze upon her, Alex launched herself at him. Her weight slammed them both into the bar, nearly toppling the Cardassian over the counter. Glass and bottles shattered noisily against the floor with a loud crash. He did not quite manage to fall over because Alex's hands were on his throat, keeping him in reach. Her fists went flying before he was even aware of the attack, striking him in the face repeatedly.
Alex.
Mary grabbed her arm, trying to stop her from beating the man senseless when the science officer shook off the attempt and jabbed an elbow into Mary's face. Mary tumbled into Vin, blood gushing from a broken nose as pandemonium broke out in the bar.
Are you all right?
Vin set Mary down hastily before turning towards Alex, who was pummeling Lamar with frenzied rage behind every blow.
I'm fine. Stop her.
Mary wiped the blood from her nose. Already fissures of broken skin appeared on the gull's face, and the advantage Alex acquired with the surprise of her attack robbed him of the ability to fight back. Vin slid his arms around Alex's waist and tore her from the Cardassian before she killed him. She reacted instinctively, preparing to fend him off as she had Mary when Vin grabbed her arm and held it there as Alex continued to struggle.
Alex, stop it.
Vin tried to make her see reason. No sooner than Alex was pulled off Lamar, Mary hurried to the Cardassian who was bleeding quite profusely. Mary tapped her comm badge.
Nathan, I need someone down in Four Corners immediately.
Around them, everyone was staring at the incident in shock, not knowing what to think. The doors of the bar slid open with Ezra and a team of security officers charged forward once they surveyed the scene and discovered what was wrong. She fought Vin with every ounce of strength she had.
Let me go. You don't understand. You don't know who he is.
Alex, enough.
His heart ached at having to do this, but she had to stop.
No, you don't know who he is. You don't know what he did.
Tears ran down her cheeks as the horror of it swelled up from the bottom of some dark place within and swallowed her whole.
You can't possibly know.
I know, Alex.
He said gently and pulled her to him as she started to break down and sob.
I know.
Chapter 6. Making a choice. If Chris Larrabee hated one thing, it was being wrong. He hated it because being wrong meant he was fallible and not as in control of his life as he wished to be. A starship captain could not afford to be mistaken. Too many lives depended on his ability to have all the answers. The nature of things required him to always have alternatives, to foresee every possibility, no matter how remote, and devise a solution to counter it, should it suddenly rear its ugly head to threaten any of them. When he received the call from Ezra Standish informing him of what took place within Four Corners, he knew he failed in that responsibility. As Chris made his way to Alexandra Stiles's quarters where he ordered her confined, with guards posted at her door to ensure she remained there, he still didn't know whether the decision to keep her on duty was wrong. Of course, he could be easily absolved of guilt by arguing no one could have possibly foreseen this set of circumstances coming to bear. Unfortunately, as he turned down the corridor and saw the two men playing sentry outside of Alex's quarters, he realized absolution would do him little good. What he needed now was an answer, which he did not have. A part of him could hear Josiah now, telling him he precipitated this situation by keeping Alex on active duty, yet Chris still failed to see what good it would have done taking her work away from her. No one could have possibly imagined Ghul Lamar was once a warder of a Cardassian gulag where the rape camp spoken of with such disgust, was his to maintain. Unfortunately, because the Ghul took a very hands-on approach to his work, Chris was now faced with a crisis he could not possibly imagine. As he approached his inevitable meeting with Alex, he found himself forced to make a choice between his duty to the Federation and upholding the honor of a friend who suffered more than she ought, by any standards. He had a feeling he was going to feel bad no matter which way this went. Upon reaching the doors, the security officers immediately snapped to attention and greeted the master of the vessel. Chris paused long enough to offer them a nod of acknowledgement before activating the panel announcing his presence. He waited for a moment to be invited in, but no answer was forthcoming. She better be in there. He used enough stern authority in his voice to indicate if she had gotten past them, there would be hell to pay.
She is, sir. She's probably worn herself out.
The lieutenant said uncomfortably, feeling awkward about revealing that snippet of information, but it was necessary. Worn herself out? Chris was almost afraid to ask.
There was a lot of noise a while ago.
The security officer responded, not needing to elaborate further because the captain would see for himself soon enough. Chris took a deep breath, deciding this was never going to be easy, and activated the door panel, entering even if Alex did not want company. What she did in Four Corners had taken that choice out of her hands. The door zipped open, and Chris stepped inside, feeling like a man about to take a walk to the gallows. When he stepped inside the room, what he saw astonished him. It appeared as if a tornado had run through the room. Anything breakable was. Everything else, upended. The usually Spartan room looked like the aftermath of the war zone. Chris's shock was apparent as he stared at the upturned furniture, the smashed breakables on the carpeted floor, creating patterns of dispersal upon impact. He trod carefully, unavoidably stepping on some broken fragments of glass as he advanced into the room. The lights were low, giving just enough illumination for him to see the destruction but little else. Shadows loomed, and he could not see Alex, even though he could hear the soft, scraping sound of metal against metal. Despite himself, he felt a slight hint of fear, not for himself but for the state of mind capable of lashing out with such violence. For the first time, Chris wondered if Josiah had been right, that keeping her on duty pushed her over the edge into an abyss without return. An abyss he could have avoided if he had just listened to the counselor.
Increase radiance of illumination by 25%,
Chris ordered, and the ever-obedient and in a matter of seconds, the vigilant ship's computer brightened the darkened corners of the room. Chris found himself a few feet from Alex. She sat at the base of the opposite wall, her shoulders bare after discarding her blazer and turtleneck. Alex was seated cross-legged as she ran a sharpening stone against the blade of what appeared to be the ceremonial dagger carried by every Klingon warrior. It took no feat of genius to guess why she was doing this now. Her eyes were still puffy and red from the tears Mary reported she wept when Vin finally tore her away from the Cardassian. However, everything else about her was as hard as the sharpening stone in her hands.
"Alex,"
Chris spoke first, wondering whether she was even aware of him. She had not given him any indication to prove otherwise. She did not answer and continued to sharpen the blade even faster.
"I thought you had to be a warrior to have one of those."
The blade stopped moving.
"You do. It was given to me by an old friend. It was returned to her with honor when her husband died in battle. She gave it to me because she had no children of her own. It was a compliment."
It was, actually, Chris thought to himself, an extremely good one. Such weapons were considered heirlooms, and those passed on by one who had gone to Stovo Corps were especially prized. Chris guessed this old friend was probably Kalyan, the Klingon housekeeper who played such a big part in Alex's youth. There was a great deal of affection behind the presentation of such a valuable gift.
"I think it's sharp enough."
Chris felt his unease grow with each stroke of her blade against that stone.
"It's never going to be sharp enough."
"Alex, think about this."
He spoke, trying to make her see reason and provide some kind of argument against using that knife she was readying for a purpose evident to all.
"You can't just kill him."
Her eyes raised to his. The look in them was menacing, and he knew he had better be ready for an attack because her body was poised to strike. Suddenly, he had the strangest feeling that killing herself was never on the agenda, and Josiah was wrong to assume such. Chris was happy to say he always thought Alex too strong to take that route, but as he saw the maniacal rage in her eyes, he realized she was strong enough to take another path, equally damning.
"Watch me."
"I won't let you kill him. I won't let you throw away your freedom, career, and everyone who cares about you because of revenge. Nothing is worth that."
"How would you know?"
Alex's voice was so sharp she made him jump when she sprang to her feet, holding the blade as if she were more than ready to start carving something up, starting with him. Chris felt silent and rebuked himself for the choice of words.
"I meant..."
"I know what you meant. I know exactly what you meant, so I can tell you exactly what I mean, and we will understand each other."
She began to pace, every muscle in her body tense as she glared at him.
"I am going to kill him. I will kill him slowly and enjoy every fucking minute of it. If that means I get locked up in a Federation prison for the rest of my natural life, at least I'll finally get some sleep. I won't have to wake up screaming every night because of the dreams that bastard put in my head."
Chris could not blame her for wanting revenge as fiercely as she did. No human being could endure what she had and not. He was not so hypocritical as to make the mistake of saying he knew how she felt. He did not, and Chris had the feeling he would never be able to. However, Chris was not about to let her go either. Perhaps he did not know about hate, but he knew enough about experiencing agony almost as overwhelming as the physical trauma she had endured as a Cardassian prisoner.
"I won't let you do it, Alex."
Chris stared at her firmly, not as a captain or a Starfleet officer but as her friend.
You mean too much to all of us for me to let you.
It's not your choice.
It is if I throw you in the brig until he leaves. I am willing to do that, Commander. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking my affections for you will keep me from doing my job. As disgusting as it may be for me to tolerate that son of a bitch in my sickbay, getting treated by my chief medical officer after what he did to you, I have to swallow it. I have to because that man is all that stands between the Dominion taking the Alpha Quadrant. When I'm faced with the slavery of billions, you have to understand I can make that choice.
Alex stopped pacing. She stared at him for a long while, aware what he said did not come from the man who was her captain. It came from someone who had given her every consideration since her arrival on the Maverick.
Do you have any idea what it was like?
No, I can't even stomach it, let alone try to imagine it.
The day after you get there, after they strip you down and leave you naked, they put this device on your chest.
She lowered the knife and let her mind go somewhere it had not gone in 3 years.
It's small, and it's surgically implanted right over your heart. It has more than enough charge to kill you, and it's controlled by remote. When you don't play their game, they turn it on, and it sends a power surge straight to your heart that stops it from skipping a beat or two. It doesn't hurt then, but it makes you pay attention.
Chris let her speak, having the impression she told no one this before and would not likely to after this. So he listened carefully because he cared and because she needed him too.
The more you misbehave, the more they use it until you feel like your heart's going to burst in your chest. They use it very frequently that first week, just to condition you to become used to the thing, used to obeying their rules. The rape begins the second week, 3 times a day, every day.
There were no tears in her eyes, but Chris could sense the anguish. Inwardly, he wished she would weep because seeing that pain was much worse than hearing her tears.
Sometimes, 3 of them, sometimes 4. Sometimes Lemar would give the order. Other times he would do it himself. He liked to see me scream in pain, and that's what it was for me for 6 months. Pain, 3 times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I was always tied up, with my hands behind my back and around the ankles, so I couldn't fight. He'd have one of his men keep an eye on the remote for the charging device, so if I struggled too hard or fought too much, he'd be able to pull me in line. That is when using me as a punching bag wasn't good enough. Do you know what it's like to smell his stink on you after he'd taken everything that mattered and know it was going to start all over again the next day until you died, or he killed you?
God, he whispered.
There is no God. I actually prayed to God to stop it, to make it end. I begged and whimpered for God to help me, but he never did.
She paused a moment and regained her composure.
I knew I was pregnant the moment it started becoming harder to keep my strength up. The whole aim of that place was to demoralize the enemy by striking at their women, so I was not going to give him the satisfaction of knowing they had won by planting their seed.
Her lips curled in open hatred as she made that admission.
I made a decision, Captain. I could either die in that place, or I could leave. In the end, it was that easy.
How did you do it?
Chris wondered how she managed it when that insidious device was attached to her heart, keeping her submissive.
Can't you guess?
It dawned upon him what she was trying to say, and he realized this more than anything was the part she could not speak out loud. It was too horrifying to think any being could be pushed so far as to use that to their advantage.
You started pretending to like it.
Yes. That animal was arrogant enough to think what he did to me was actually pleasurable. Lemar believed me when I pretended to enjoy it. Each time, I did for him what none of the others would. It made me sick to my stomach, but I convinced him to take that fucking thing off me. The minute I was free, I headed to the station's engineering deck. I built myself a beautifully simple but ultimately lethal surprise that lowered the containment field around their antimatter core. Then I got in an escape pod and saw the fireworks from space. I assumed he died there, but I'm guessing the reason why he was stripped of his command and recalled to Cardassia Prime has got a lot to do with that.
When she finished, silence ensued, and for a long while, neither of them spoke. The quiet lingered in the room, with only their breathing offering any discernible signs of life or reaction. Chris watched her as she was lost in that faraway place, trying to imagine what it was to have endured what she had and could understand why she chose to tell him and not Vin. He could handle such horror, Vin would not. There was too much passion inside Vin for Alex to hear it as she was telling Chris now. The Vulcan would react in the extreme and probably kill Lemar himself. Alex would not ruin Vin with the knowledge of what happened to her.
I still can't let you kill him, Alex.
Alex sank to her haunches again and looked at the blade before dropping it on the floor. A soft thud followed when it landed.
I know.
We have a problem.
The captain decided to be honest with her since she had offered him the same courtesy.
We need him, Alex, as unfair and outrageous as that might seem to you right now, we need him to help us find this planet. If the Dominion wins this war, it means the Cardassians win too, and what happened to you will happen to every woman a Cardassian occupying force takes a liking to. You know that.
I won't let that happen.
She responded, hating this realization more than anything, even more than her revenge. The idea that someone else, Mary or Julia or, God forbid, Casey might endure the hell she suffered made her revenge feel like ash in her mouth.
The thing is,
Chris looked at her, waiting for her reaction when he made his next confession.
I need you too.
Alex raised her eyes with mild surprise.
You're the best damn science officer I have ever served with Commander Stiles. You work so much on instinct, I am absolutely sure you are almost as vital to our chances of finding this planet as the animal we got down in sickbay. What you did in Four Corners is a justifiable act. I'll put my command up against anyone who says otherwise. I'll resign my commission first before I let them remove you from your post, but I have to have your guarantee that we do things my way.
Your way?
Alex asked, willing to listen because of his vow to fight for her career.
My way is that we ride this out. You do not lay one finger on him or go anywhere near him. If we survive this mission, I will have him in the brig so fast his head will spin. I'm guessing he counted on no one knowing what he did when he came over to the other side. We'll make nice with him because we are allies, but when the mission is over, I will arrest him on the charge of war crimes. He won't have any choice but to submit because going to a Federation prison is a lot more merciful than what will happen to him if he returns to the Dominion after his bridges are so well and truly burnt.
Jail? You want to lock him up?
Yes. That's as good as it's going to get, Alex. Now I know that does not seem fair to you under any circumstances, and I'm not going to even begin to guess what a suitable punishment for a man like this is, but I don't care about him. I care about you. You get to walk out of this with your life and your career intact. You escaped that prison because you made a choice to survive. Now you're going to have to make the same choice to live.
He deserves to die,
she hissed angrily, but her rage was more at herself. He was right. She had a lot to live for. There were friends now and some measure of peace that had been lost for so long. After 3 years of wandering through the wreckage of her life, traces of the person she had been was making a comeback. Alex did not want to lose that, no matter how angry she was or how terrible the memories were. More than anything, she wanted this to be over, so she could move on and sleep without waking up screaming, without recoiling from every man who smiled her way and tried to touch her. Like Vin. She cared about him, suspected he was the threshold of something truly remarkable if only she dared let him in. He wanted to so badly, she could sense it. Alex was not blind to how he felt about her. Yet as adamant as she was about how she felt for Vin Tanner, a part of Alex was terrified of bringing down her walls and letting him see just how broken she was inside.
I am not arguing with you there, but that's the deal.
Chris sensed she was very near to agreement and drew upon all the power he had to convince her.
I don't want you to throw your life away because of this bastard. He's already killed the person you were before you wound up in his prison. I am not letting him kill the person you are now too.
Alex closed her eyes and wrestled with her conflicting emotions. She knew what she wanted. She wanted to take her dagger and sink it in Lamar's loins as far as she could bury it and watch him bleed to death in a visceral expression of agony, but Chris was right. It was not going to happen, even if Ezra's security was lax enough to permit it. But the captain was right about something else too. 3 years ago, she decided to survive, and the consequences of that decision allowed her to escape and regain some sense of self, almost totally destroyed inside that prison. Now she had to make another choice, just as equally important. She had to decide to live. She couldn't do that until she let go of her hate and accepted justice as it stood. Otherwise, she would always be trapped in the dark, afraid to dream.
All right.
She surrendered, feeling the words escape her lips against her will.
We'll do it your way.
Good.
Chris accepted her answer without reaction. For a second, he wasn't sure if she would accept his terms at all. He was grateful she had because he had no wish to pass judgment on her if she carried out her threat and killed Lamar.
Now, I'm giving you a day off duty for you to sort yourself out.
Instinctively, he glanced at the demolished room.
I suggest you stay out of his way, and even if you still have the urge to kill him, Ezra has a security detail posted to him to make sure neither of you gets within 10 feet of each other.
I can work from Astrometrics. I'll stay out of Lamar's way, and you keep him out of mine. I'm doing this for you, Captain, and for me as well, but I'm fighting a lot of instincts. I wouldn't tempt fate by putting him in my sights.
Chris approached her for the first time and placed his hand on her face, raising her chin so she would look at him.
This is for the best, Alex. I know it's hard for you to appreciate that, but trust me, this way is better for you.
I hope you're right, Captain. I really do.
And to her surprise, Alex realized she meant it.